Now from the KSFR Newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Friday, September 20th.
New Mexico's unemployment rate dipped a tenth of a percentage point last month to 6.8%. The U.S. Department of Labor reports that New Mexico is among 17 states that experienced lower jobless rates. The Labor Department report indicates that the number of people out of work rose in 18 states, with 29 reporting job gains and 20 reporting job losses in August. Nationally, the economy added 169,000 jobs last month, a number that hardly suggests a robust job market. Damage assessment in New Mexico continues in the wake of our record-breaking rains recently. Federal Emergency Management Agency assessors are in Los Alamos County today, according to KOB-TV's website. The Los Alamos County Administrator issued a disaster declaration yesterday after estimating local damages needing $5 million or more to repair. Infrastructure needing attention include roads, retaining walls, and utility lines. New Mexico's three House members have voted along party lines on cuts to food stamps. Ben Ray Lujan voted against the Republican-sponsored bill that would cut $39 billion from SNAP, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, otherwise known as food stamps. The national program helps 179,000 households here in New Mexico. District 1's Michelle Lujan Grisham also voted against the cuts. Congressman Steve Pierce joined fellow Republicans in support of the cuts, which passed on a party line 217 to 210 vote. Meanwhile, this morning has seen the House pass a stopgap funding bill that would effectively shut down the government unless the nation's Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is defunded. It, too, passed along a party-line vote, 230 to 189. Democratic Representatives Grisham and Lujan both say elimination of the health care law would do great harm to New Mexicans, especially our state's seniors and children. Santa Fe skiers and outdoor enthusiasts might one day have the option of taking a bus to the Santa Fe ski area. City Councilor Patty Boucher is calling for such bus service via the North Regional Transit District. Boucher is the city's representative on the Transit District's board and is planning a formal request for such bus service. Jim Nagel, a Transit District spokesman, says while the idea has been discussed before, it's a bit preliminary.
Because no formal proposal has been brought to the RTD at this time. My understanding is that she's putting something together to bring to the NCRTD board at its October board meeting, but nothing formally has been proposed to us at this time. Certainly one of the things that has to be looked at is that we provide service Monday through Friday, and with the ski basin, you know, weekend service is obviously going to be of a lot of interest to them, but you know, we don't service Saturdays and Sundays at this point.
He continues to criticize a portion of the proposed SunZia transmission line that would traverse a 40-mile segment of White Sands Missile Range. Today's Albuquerque Journal reports that the range's commanding general expects the line to have negative impacts for some of White Sands' national defense missions. Within weeks, the Bureau of Land Management is expected to issue final approvals of SunZia's proposed 550-mile route across southern New Mexico and Arizona. The project's manager has previously said that any change now for the $1.2 billion enterprise would effectively kill it. The city of Rio Rancho has two high-profile job openings, police chief and mayor. Robert Boone, who's been the city's top cop for 9 years, announced yesterday that he's retiring. And Mayor Tom Swistak announced he will not seek re-election. Swistak, who was elected in 2008 to serve out the final 2 years of former Mayor Kevin Jackson's term, he was re-elected in 2010 by a wide margin. Storage vessels used by the oil and gas industry are the subject of several open meetings around the state next week. The New Mexico Environment Department's Air Quality Bureau is developing a new construction permit for containment vessels in response to a new federal regulation which requires installation of such control devices. Monday's meetings on the issue take place in Santa Fe, Farmington, and Roswell at local Environment Department offices. The newest report from the U.S. Drought Monitor indicates that recent rains have significantly reduced drought conditions across New Mexico. Categorization of severe drought or worse now covers less than half of the state. Just last week, that figure was over 75%, and 3 months ago, almost the entire state was affected. Much of Santa Fe County, however, is still listed as being in severe drought, with the southeastern corner rated as extreme. Weather for Santa Fe: more tranquil weather is expected today through the weekend. Mostly sunny days with highs in the mid-70s and just a slight chance for isolated late-day showers. A cold front passing through Sunday, the first day of autumn, is likely to bring our first night of the season with lows in the 40s. I'm Tom Tropebridge for KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And we have more of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Evolve Real Estate Santa Fe. Local, independent, responsive. When selling a home or looking for a new one, Evolve Real Estate is here. Learn more on the web at evolvesantafe.com or by calling 699-3985. That's 699-3985.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. As the nation continues to slowly recover from the economic challenges of the last several years, recent census data shows New Mexico still performing very poorly, particularly in terms of the numbers of our state citizens living in poverty. Jerry Bradley is the research director at the New Mexico Voices for Children. He joins us now. Jerry, tell us, what do these figures show?
Well, we're going the wrong way from 2000 to 2012. That's for sure. In the last, between 2011 and 2012, the poverty rate seems to have finally stabilized. But I look at it through the lens of the labor market, and the labor market is starting to recover. It's not really visible in 2012, but in 2013. The unemployment rate is stabilized and job growth is starting again.
Is the high unemployment rate due solely to the recession?
Most of it is due to the recession. As I say, some of it is due to bad public policy, where we were cutting government employment when we should have been adding it. It would have been, at the federal level, it was a result of bad policy, that such as the budget deal and now the sequester that have resulted in less federal employment. But at the state level, we could have raised taxes on the higher income people and kept people working in state government and higher education and K-12, which is not what we did. We didn't increase taxes on high end people, and we laid off people in higher ed and in state government. The year 2000 was not a particularly bad year, and the year 2012 was still a pretty bad year. We were still feeling the results of the recession. Looking at the numbers, I think we did some counterproductive things. We're still losing in 2012. We were still losing government employment. Government employment was going down both at the federal and state and local levels. So we were seeing the effects of public policy that were counterproductive.
And the estimate of how many New Mexicans are living in poverty now?
We had below poverty in 2012 was a whopping 426,000. People below the poverty line. And that's about 20% of our 20.8% of our population is below the poverty line.
And what does New Mexico Voices for Children advocate as remedy for the situation?
At the state level, we definitely should still be looking at increasing taxes at the high end, and in some ways we're. At Voices, we're looking at bad policy that shouldn't take effect. We cut taxes on corporations tremendously less in the 2013 legislative session, and they're thinking of thinking up ways of cutting taxes on corporations and high-end individuals even more. So that we think those kinds of things are counterproductive. We would like to see the cuts in higher education and in K-12 education rolled back. We'd like to get back to, at least get back to where we were in fiscal year 2008, which we're just barely getting back to the budget levels of 2008. So we need to roll back those cuts on education. And finally, Mexico Voices for Children is always telling state government, telling policymakers that we need to increase spending on early care. There's an education at birth to three. There's a tremendous amount of research now that shows that a lot of brain development takes place from birth to three, and that we need to be spend significantly more money on early care.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
I think that the recent kids count numbers that show New Mexico at the bottom, and now these the poverty numbers that show New Mexico ahead of Mississippi. We have to take this seriously and start turning public policy around. Cutting taxes on corporations and on high income individuals has been tried now, and it's failed. We need to look at rolling back the cuts and investing in early care and education.
Jerry Bradley with New Mexico Voices for Children. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Take the High Road and experience fine art in northern New Mexico this fall. It's the 16th annual High Road Art Tour, offering world-class work with over 70 artists and craftspersons, opening their home and studios on the High Road to Taos Scenic Byway, September 21st and 22nd, 28th and 29th. Maps and more information at highroadnewmexico.com or call 888-866-3643. That's highroadnewmexico.com. A message from the tax-exempt High Road Artisans.
18 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. In recent years, due to drought-induced water shortages, New Mexico has been pumping groundwater into the Pecos River to help meet contractual obligations to farmers needing an irrigation source. That compact was established back in 2003. Recent monsoons have drastically changed the situation. Here to discuss it is Estefan Lopez, the director of the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission. Estefan, tell us about the pumping.
The Interstate Stream Commission had been pumping groundwater from two well fields in the lower Pecos River into the Pecos River, and this was under the terms of a 2003 settlement that was signed amongst the Carlsbad Irrigation District, the Pecos Valley Artesian Conservancy District, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, the Office of the State Engineer, and the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission. This settlement was the result of settlement of litigation in the water rights adjudication for the Lower Pecos. For years and years, the Carlsbad Irrigation District and the Pecos Valley Artesian Conservancy District had been at odds over how this river system should be operated, and claimed, while they're lowest on the system in New Mexico, they claimed the oldest priority date, so that should give them the best water right. And what that typically would mean is that water needs to go by more junior users upstream in order to assure that they have the water that they need. But this is a very complex system. The more junior users upstream aren't taking surface water from the stream. They're taking, in most instances, groundwater, and quite often from a deep artesian aquifer that is connected to the river in terms of its impact, or rather, in terms of the impacts of groundwater pumping. Those things are felt in the river, but only over a long time frame. The parties finally agreed that if we could develop a well field that would help assure that Carlsbad Irrigation District would get additional supplies during drought periods, and that the other and perhaps the primary reason for the development of the well field was also to assure that we would be able to deliver water to Texas under the Pecos River Compact in times of drought. So we developed these two well fields, one near Lake Arthur and the other just north of Carlsbad at Seven Rivers. And so we've been pumping, because of the drought, we've been pumping continuously since about March of 2011.
Then that major storm of September 11th hit, and that has allowed you to take an unprecedented step, and that is turning the pumps off.
Suddenly we were beyond our targets in terms of pumping, and we were able to turn off our pumps. And we've had to turn off individual wells as we've had problems with them, or, you know, perhaps for short periods of time if we've had to deal with maintenance issues and that sort of thing. But we've been pumping continuously since then. And that really, in March of 2011, was the first time that we had to pump. And so we've been pumping continuously till September 13th. On that day, we realized we're going to hit the targets of water supply, and we can turn these things off, and the water supply has continued to come up.
And how long do you anticipate being able to leave the pumps off?
The way this settlement works is on November 1st, we'll have to make a projection of supply for next March. If that projection were to show that we projected having less than 50,000 acre feet, we would have to again start pumping. But already, with the amount of water that's in storage, we've far exceeded that 50,000 acre foot threshold for next March. And I believe that we'll probably have a full supply through all of next year. So I think it's unlikely that we'll have to turn on our pumps at all next year. And hopefully, if we get more into a more of a normal precipitation pattern, hopefully we can keep those pumps off for a lot longer than just a year.
Anything you'd like to add?
This has been an amazing storm all across the state. All the river systems pretty much have gotten a lot more water in them. And this is incredibly beneficial. I'm sorry for those people around the state that have suffered some flooding, but, you know, on the other hand, there was a lot of suffering that was going on as a result of the drought as well, and we've got to try and make some good news out of this precipitation.
Stefan Lopez of the Interstate Water Commission, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Hello, this is Tom O'Connor, music director and conductor of Santa Fe Pro Musica, inviting you to join us for the opening of our 32nd season. On September 19th in St. Francis Auditorium, award-winning pianist and composer Conrad Tau performs his music, as well as music of Bach, Prokofiev, and Rachmaninoff. And on September 21st and 22nd, he performs as concerto soloist in the Lensic with the Pro Musica Orchestra and concertos of Mozart and Shostakovich. Among his many awards is the 2012 Avery Fisher Career Grant and Forbes' list of 30 under 30. But more important than any of the awards is the way Conrad Tau communicates with his audiences. It's direct, unaffected, and riveting. Join us for the opening of Santa Fe Pro Musica's 32nd season. Tickets are available through the Pro Musica box office at 988-4640 or online at santafepromusica.com. Pro Musica is a tax-exempt organization.
25 minutes past the hour here in the KSFR newsroom. Over this week, KSFR News reporter Marion Cox has brought us her discussion with Santa Fe County Commissioner Kathy Holian on several important topics for county residents, the Sustainable Land Development Code, and the presently underway annexation. In today's installment, Marion and Commissioner Holian talk about another subject that will be formally addressed in the future, that is, the creation of a new animal control ordinance. Here now is Marion's report.
Tell us what's going on with county initiatives in the animal control area.
Well, we are rewriting our county animal control ordinance, and it's been a longer process than I thought. We really started on it, I think, over a year ago. I thought it was going to be fairly straightforward to do this, to bring this up to modern standards and so on, but there turned out to be a couple of controversial issues, and we're still working on those issues and figuring out the very best way to implement our ordinance.
Tell us what the controversial elements are of the newly conceived or updated animal control ordinance that the Board of County Commissioners is considering.
Well, there are two main issues. One is the whole concept of feral cat colonies. There are a number of people in our county who maintain feral cat colonies, and there are arguments to do that. People who are very responsible feral cat colony owners take the feral cats into the animal shelter, have them marked, have them vaccinated, check for health issues, then have their ears tipped so that they know that they have been checked out. And they also have them, of course, spayed or neutered so that they don't reproduce. There are a number of people, though, especially people who are really bird lovers, who are worried about having any cats out in the open whatsoever.
Whether feral cat colonies will still be allowed?
Is that the issue?
What's the other issue with animal control?
How animals are controlled in the very rural areas. Many people live in the country. They may or may not have fences around their property. So the question is how they control their pets, specifically dogs. There are people who just believe in letting their dogs run wild, and sometimes those dogs can be aggressive and attack other dogs or even attack people. So we are working on coming up with a designation of a dangerous animal. If a pet owner is determined to have what we define as a dangerous animal, then they will have to keep that animal under control at all times and not allow it to run wild.
So this is something more assertive or more aggressive than a simple leash law?
Correct.
And these are two, I can tell already, pretty hot-button emotional issues. How does the Board of County Commissioners come to a resolution of the feral cat colony issue and the aggressive dog issue?
I'm not really sure how we were going to come to a resolution, but I think that in my particular case, I'm going to read as much as I can about what is happening in other communities where they've made good decisions about these two issues.
And what's the timeline or time frame for, again, publicly discussing this as part of a BCC meeting, Board of County Commissioner meeting, and ultimately making a decision?
It may not happen until the beginning of the next year. And the reason for this is, again, as I said before, my primary goal is to get the Sustainable Land Development Code in place. And so I don't want this to take away from accomplishing that.
That was Marion Cox speaking with Santa Fe County Commissioner Kathy Holian. And At Noon will continue in just a moment.
KSFR's on-air fall fun drive begins October 6th. By donating now, you can help us keep the drive short, and you'll have two chances to win an Apple mini iPad. The early bird drawing for the first mini iPad will be held on Friday, October 4th. If you've received an envelope from us, please mail it in today. You can also donate on our website, ksfr.org, by clicking on the red button at the top of the homepage, or by calling 428-1527. That's 428-1527. Thank you for your support and making KSFR possible.
Attorney General Gary King, along with 13 other attorneys general from Western states, is appealing to U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, seeking federal funds that have been withheld or sequestered under the Budget Control Act approved by Congress 2 years ago. Joining us now is New Mexico Attorney General Gary King. Sir, can you summarize this state and federal budget issue for us?
There's an agreement between the states and the federal government. Particularly states in the West have a lot of federal land that's really, for the trust of the states, too, so that we can continue to grow and do well. And the attorneys general have been concerned that under sequestration, there were two federal agencies, actually the Department of Interior and the Department of Agriculture, who announced to the states that they were going to be withholding certain payments because of the sequestration. And so we complained to the Department of Interior recently that those monies were not monies that were subject to sequestration, and the Interior Department agreed with us, and now we're working on the Agriculture Department.
And explain to us, if you will, the importance of these funds.
So it's a significant amount of money to be used for our state, and it would be, it sort of replaces the fact that there are not property taxes that are paid on a lot of these lands.
And what's the next step for New Mexico in this effort to get its funding from the federal government?
Well, I think that that we will see what Secretary Vilsack, how he responds. We did get a positive response from the Department of Interior when we made the same request from the Department of Interior, but if the Department of Agriculture refuses to release the funds, then the Western states have agreed, the attorneys general have agreed, that we will look and see what our legal remedies are to go into court to recover the funds.
Attorney General Gary King, many thanks for joining us here at noon. For a number of years, New Mexico has dealt with a physician shortage. Recently, some have blamed part of the shortage on Obamacare. Here with a story is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard.
New Mexico has been dealing with the shortage of physicians for some time. Now, some are suggesting that part of the cause is the Affordable Care Act. Jerry Harrison is the executive director of New Mexico Health Resources.
Well, there's nothing new about the shortage of physicians. New Mexico has been chronically short for decades, and many organizations, the legislature, several governors have attempted to address and ameliorate the shortage over a variety of years. And so there's nothing particularly new that we have a shortage.
He doesn't agree that there's a strong connection with the Affordable Care Act.
I don't see a connection in reference to shortage at all. The shortage stems from a couple, three or four different reasons. The major ones being demographic and economic. The demographic shortage that we're experiencing in New Mexico is because of the age of physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, and others in the health professions that have led to large numbers of retirements. Specifically for the shortage that is not only in New Mexico but is national, is the way that graduate medical education is funded by Medicare. And the number of physicians that are being trained was capped by the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. So we today have a lot of economic and demographic factors at work that have gone on for decades. Today, there are approximately 22,000 residency slots. The study led Congress and Medicare to cap the number being trained with the expectation that in the year 2000, there would actually be a surplus of physicians. Where the connection with maybe the disciplines of physicians associated with the Affordable Care Act is the emphasis being placed now and in the future on primary care. And so estimates of the number of physicians short, primary care physicians short in the state range between 400 and 600. The highest, if specialists are included, that I've read is about 2,000 or so. There is also in our state the factor of tremendous maldistribution of physicians into Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Las Cruces.
Harrison does have some ideas on how to alleviate the shortage.
Well, I think there should be a national focus upon increasing the number of residency slots in the training hospitals. We're fortunate that we have a training institution in New Mexico at the university, and the family medicine residencies that exist in Santa Fe, Las Cruces, and a new one that's just opened up down in Silver City. The state may look.
He also has some predictions regarding physician supply in New Mexico in the next few years.
The American Association of Medical Colleges, about a year and a half ago, placed New Mexico as the state with the largest proportion of physicians over the age of 60 and the smallest proportion among all of the states of physicians under the age of 40. So we have to look at the range of opportunities that we have to recruit and retain the folks that are becoming available as they graduate, as well as focusing on making sure that we have incentives in place to keep those good providers that we do have.
Jerry Harrison with New Mexico Health Resources. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:36 here in the newsroom. Here at the bottom of the hour is the best time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I knew that it happened. I just didn't know to what an extent, and it's a pretty big extent. I don't know if it's as big an extent can get. I'm certainly not versed to that extent and extent, to extend the extent extension, but back to the extent I didn't know. Thanks to ABC News and my ex-girlfriend Diane Sawyer, I learned that skimming is a multi-billion, that was with a B, dollar business. And what is skimming? It's when bad guys put a little computer gizmo on a gas pump that skims and captures your credit and debit card information every time you swipe plastic to pay for gas. ABC's advice, pick a pump within sight of the attendant or pay inside and always check your credit and debit card statements. And a curmudgeon tip, use a credit card instead of a debit card, easier to reverse fraudulent charges. Just some tips for when you're at the gas pump to keep your vehicle the only one getting hosed. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge, Marion Cox, and Charles Maynard. We will start fresh on Monday with more News Oven for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us.